listening to Fox Sports Radio. This is Straight Out of Vegas. With the voice of Vegas, your host, RJ Bell. The pregame show America has always wanted. I doubt the future. I doubt the future. From the Vegas Strip, here's RJ Bell.
You heard it. I'm RJ, live coast to coast, 200 Fox Sports radio stations. 6 o'clock Eastern, drive time, 3 o'clock here in Las Vegas. What a day. I mean, Wednesday, you might think it's slow. No, Antonio Brown. This is an area I think the Vegas approach can really benefit from. You guys can, which is the rigor, the way we, with our methods, think about uncertain information. I mean, by definition, a legal case that's in dispute has uncertain information. You don't know who to believe. You don't know what weight to put upon this piece of evidence. Just like Fezzik might say, oh, I think this is very important that we saw in week one. It's all this data, all this evidence, and he's saying this is what's important, this is what's not. We'll try to help you with that from our perspective when it comes to this Antonio Brown situation. We spoke of Fezzik. He's one of the pros who know. We also have a special guest. Maddie Holt is in studio. Now, who's that, you might say? A lot of you, probably most of you, don't know him. You think that's right, Matt?
I bet it's 50-50.
Under.
50-50? I'd like to take that bet. Now, here's the thing about Maddie. In the last 10 years, he's probably been behind the counter. Yes, one of the cockroaches, as we like to say, but my favorite one. But now he's out behind the counter doing some integrity stuff, but he knows the businesses of betting about as well as anyone. And still a young guy, too, all the betting action he's taken. Sports bettors listen for the money. Sports fans listen to no more than their buddies. My personal promise, we will deliver the Vegas truth to you. Now, he's in Los Angeles. He's Jonas Knox.
Always good to be here, RJ. And yes, we start in the NFL as the Antonio Brown saga continues. The latest was a report that came out from the New York Times on Tuesday night that stating that Antonio Brown was being sued for sexual assault and rape by a former trainer. So here we are again, Antonio Brown in the news, this time for allegations from his former trainer.
Yeah, and I think we all would agree, whatever was happening before that we know about with Brown, you would say shenanigans, you know, the helmet stuff, whatever. And it was very predictive of potential trouble where this guy isn't necessarily thinking straight. This guy isn't necessarily focused on winning. All reasonable discussions. But now we're moving into, you know, going to jail for 20 years potentially or whatever the term would be, many, many years. I want to just lay it out because I've thought about this a lot today. I've listened to a bunch of the voices that I think are, let's just say, they approach things in a thoughtful way. That's what I was interested in today. And the first thing we got to realize is this. One, this is a civil case, not a criminal case. Now, civil, it means it's about money, effectively. And doesn't mean that's wrong, right? When O.J. Simpson was found innocent or not guilty, technically, in the criminal case, the Goldmans, others, I think, went after him civilly. Now, what's the difference? One, you don't go to jail in a civil case, and the remuneration, the reward, or the payment, if you think about it on the other side, is financial, right? So O.J. was found guilty in the civil case and had to pay, at least he was ordered to pay millions of dollars. Okay, he didn't go to jail though. In the criminal case, if he had lost, he wouldn't have been fined, right? He would have went to jail. So one's about freedom, that's criminal. One's about money. And it makes sense that with those distinctions, that the burden of proof, the standard of proof is different, right? In civil, and this is the proof standard they used in Deflategate, it's called a preponderance of evidence. Well, preponderance is a fancy way of saying more than half, a majority. So the way to think of it is 50.01% likelihood. So Fez, when we bet, because of the VIG, we have to be over 50%. We got to be 52.4 or so, right? But when we do no VIG betting, right, we have the green buttons, we just say, hey, if it's 50-point-something, hey, if you're betting even money, you're going to do pretty well in the long run.
Yes.
Right? So it is almost like, would you bet it? If you're on a civil jury, the question is, would you bet he's guilty? And if you would, you say guilty. And if not, you wouldn't. Now, criminal, beyond a reasonable doubt. Now, I heard Clay Travis today. Now, this is a guy with a law degree, so let's acknowledge that. He was saying, oh, I think, you know, criminally 98%. It's like, so by definition, one out of 50 people in prison, by that standard, one out of 50 would be innocent. And to me, I think the standard should be, you know, is it one in 500 should be innocent? No one should, but I mean, you kind of got to accept that, right? And that's one of the beautiful things about the American justice system is the idea that it's not about how many criminals we put in jail. It's about the way we treat the criminals fairly, giving them every chance to find themselves or prove their innocence. And I think that distinction, it's not 51% to go to jail. It's not, in my opinion, 98. It should be much, much more. And we all got to ask ourselves, if you say 98, that's the standard, then what's the consequence? One of 50 people in prison being innocent. I don't think we want that. We certainly don't want that if we were involved, right? I would want that standard high. Luckily, I've never been on trial, knock on wood. I'm RJ Bell, straight out of Vegas. Fezzik, you've had a few criminal dust-ups, right?
No, just a...
With the IRS, especially.
No, just the Nevada... had to use the Nevada Gaming Commission to get paid.
Now, let's segue. What is the criminal status? Now, unless there's been an update, and Jonas, jump in, because I've been, last hour or so, not on the internet, my understanding is that we don't know. Odds are, my gut feeling, personal opinion here, if there were a criminal investigation, we would know about it. Because it would seem, and this doesn't mean that the woman is wrong, it doesn't mean she's lying, but it feels like that there was some thought to the PR side of this. That's my impression. So if you're releasing texts and emails that are incriminating the Brown from the woman's side releasing it, then it kind of makes sense if it's being pursued in a criminal sense that would be out there. Now, if it hasn't been said, I speculate that it's either the police said no, you know, we've looked at it, not enough evidence, or she hasn't gone to the police and the police would literally just be finding out from the news what's going on. If it's the latter, if she hasn't gone to the police, we don't know. Maybe the police are going to look and say it's a slam dunk. You're right. You should have reported it. If it's something where the police said no thank you, or not no thank you in this case, but rather we don't think it rises to that level, then it really works against her case. So to me, as we see things unfold, I'm going to be very anxious for the details associated on the criminal side. Also, let's talk about how we got here, because something, and I give credit to these guys, Mike Florio did this and Clay did this. And Florio's an attorney also, is they said, listen, more times than you can imagine, there's a nuisance threat. It's someone, and again, I'm not saying this is the case here. I'm talking abstractly, conceptually, is they're saying oftentimes someone will have given a guy a man a massage, let's say. And this is, again, a hypothetical. And he was fresh. Or maybe he did hit on her. Maybe he was a little rude. Or more than a little rude. Right? But there was no impropriety, let's say, sexual assault level. And then they say, okay, we're going to then attempt to, or they then say, hey, lawsuit time. We were in this room together. Here's our evidence. And what they know, the guy in this case, is the story on SportsCenter is going to be rape allegations. So if you have a public presence, no doubt there's times that people try to exploit that. And oftentimes the guy will pay it off. Because if you've got millions of dollars and they're asking for $100K, $200K, even $300K, if the evidence looks, even if it's going to be one news cycle, how much would a guy worth $50 million pay not to be known as, oh, and again, you have no idea 10 years from now, they're just going to remember rape allegations. They're not going to know that it was maybe dismissed with prejudice or whatever. Now, I would say, and I'm no expert at this, but unequivocally, a vast majority of the time that there's allegations of sexual assault, it's true. Doesn't mean we should judge Brown by that standard. But I think what we've seen in the Me Too movement, and some people would think it's gone too far, others not far enough. So there's a wide range of political beliefs. But I think one thing that is maybe close to beyond debate is if someone goes through something traumatic, they shouldn't necessarily have a second trauma by reporting it, which has been historically a concern. By the same token, the man should be able to vigorously defend himself in a fair way, let's say. Well, I guess from his perspective, he should just try his best to stay out of jail. That's the system, right? Everyone's trying their best to follow the rules, but then stay out of jail. I just don't want it to be taken as, oh, this woman is likely just money grubbing, though that seems to be the party line from Antonio Brown's camp. But I also don't want to assume that Brown's guilty, right? That's kind of the whole point, right? Innocent till proven guilty. Now, what gets interesting is, what do you do in the interim from the time of the accusation to the resolution? Because typically, if it's not a capital case, if it's not murder one on the criminal side, you're out on bail, and the bail is reasonable. By definition, the Bill of Rights say reasonable bail. And OJ was a capital case, murder one, and thus he had to be in jail because they figure the evidence is strong. That was a perception from the prosecutor. The judge agreed, and we can't have a guy flee. Thus, you don't get bail for that. And now, almost every other case, you get bail, and most people can afford it. And you know, you've heard of bail, bondsmen, and all that. So the NFL is a different situation. And to me, it's probably the most interesting question about this. And when we come back, that's what we're going to discuss is I think we've laid out now the reality of the situation, at least the framework about the civil criminal difference, the key questions specifically, what is the criminal reality of this? But now the real question is, to me, the resolution on this literally could be a year plus. I mean, if you told me this is not going to be resolved for over a year, I would say that makes sense. That doesn't surprise me. So it could be 18 months. Imagine the next two seasons, we don't have from the civil case a resolution on this. What do you do with Brown in the interim? Because on one hand, you could say he's innocent till proven guilty. On the other hand, you could say, well, Tom Brady got suspended four games for a couple ounces of air in a football. So how do you balance the two? I don't think it's easy. It's what we're going to talk about when we come back.
That's coming up next. He's RJ Bell. I'm Jonas Knox, and this is the pregame show you've always wanted right here on Fox Sports Radio.
Straight out of Vegas!
Be sure to catch live editions of Straight Out of Vegas weekdays at 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
I'm RJ Bell. We are straight out of Vegas.
And I'm Jonas Knox, voice of You, the Fan. Coming up here in just a few moments, we will have some disagreements between Steve Fezzik and some NFL experts.
Yes, it's true. Well, experts is a question mark. At least they purport to be. Fez says, no, I'm going to explain why you're wrong. Thanks for joining us. We are on 200 Fox Sports Radio stations across the country. You can listen that way. FoxSportsRadio.com, the iHeartRadio app, Sirius, and podcasts on demand. Just search for RJ Bell. Right now in Las Vegas on the Strip, it's 90 degrees. The neon is flowing. Now, we talked about AB. We're going to wrap this up. And the key, I think, to the first segment is the idea of civil case. It's about money, criminal, about freedom. And the key question is, what is going to happen in the interim between now, the accusation, and what happens or when it's resolved, right? Now, what is resolution? What's going to be the resolution of this? It could be the civil case, having a trial verdict. It could be some type of settlement. And that gets interesting. If it's a type of settlement, it could be a closed settlement where the case is dismissed and there's a gag order. Now, what does the NFL do, right? Maybe he pays her $10 million. Maybe he pays her a dollar. But just because there's a settlement, we wouldn't think necessarily you could then react to that quote-unquote resolution because it might not even be public. We also know the NFL is going to be investigating themselves. They don't have subpoena power. They don't have the ability to force people to participate. They can't force documents to be delivered. So the woman says she'll cooperate. Antonio Brown, his team, what they might do, we don't know. So my guess is the NFL attempts to get a guess on is Brown guilty. And based upon their private investigation, that will probably inform them. Do they suspend him or whatever lingo, commissioner's list, during that interim time, which could be, again, two full seasons. It literally could be before this is resolved. And that's interesting. Imagine they come away saying, we don't have all the facts, but we think there's an 80% chance that he's guilty. Now what do you do? All right? Because this is 2 years potentially of his career. On the other hand, no doubt the Ray Rice situation, the whole evolution of the Me Too movement, the NFL has, to some degree, it seems, a woman problem. And, you know, having the little yellow ribbons for 1 month of the year doesn't necessarily change that, though it's a good move in the direction, it seems. So what do they do? How much of this is about what's right? How much of this is about PR? For the NFL. It's a multiple billion-dollar business. So obviously they got those considerations. I'm RJ Bell, straight out of Vegas. Last thing on this case. Brown could be, and this is going to sound wild, but he could have made a courageous decision here. Meaning the odds are strong that she approached him beforehand. We don't even know her team where, hey, this is the case we're going to file. Here's the settlement we would accept. We don't know for sure, but in a vast majority of these cases, that's what happens. Even if it happened, as in the event, the crime, oftentimes if you're in civil court, you're looking for money, right? So the idea, I won't take money to settle this civil case. Well, why are you in a civil case? Well, it's about money, right? So that doesn't in any way impugn this woman, but rather it's the reality of the venue of the civil case. And imagine if let's say it was a shakedown and Brown says, well, I could pay these, almost certainly I would guess less than $1 million and this doesn't get out, or I can know that this is going to lead every talk show, you know, maybe not lead it for weeks and weeks, but Brown is literally tarnishing his brand. Even if he's 100% innocent, by letting this become public, if he had a chance to stop it. And to be candid, if he's guilty and he had a chance to stop it and didn't, then he's crazy, right? If he's innocent and had a chance to stop it, but he didn't with money, then what is that? That seems like courage. Now, I'm not at all saying that's the case, but it is interesting that this is a rare thing. How often do we hear about sexual assault as a civil case in the NFL? Fez, can you think of another time?
I can't. It's always criminal, right?
Yeah. So the cops are going to go forward no matter what. And if anything, a criminal verdict helps the civil case. It almost makes it a lock, right? Because that's a different standard of proof, higher for criminal. So the fact that it's civil only at this point is our understanding. It means that chances are Brown was approached and he said, nope, I'm not paying you off. If that's what he believes, and again, we don't know it. We don't know it at all. Wow. Then it's like he's saying, I want to clear my name. Though I'm guessing there's been dozens of other cases in the last 10, 20 years in which they just paid him off. And that's why we've never heard of it.
Sure.
Right? So to me, or it could be he's crazy and he did it and he still wants to fight it. Right? Or it could be they sent the letter and he never opened his mail because he's in the chamber freezing his feet. And so who knows? But in general, the most curious thing here is the fact that we're hearing about this. Because again, when else have we heard about such things? And remember, you might say, oh, the commissioner, he needs to do this or that, and here's the standard. Well, what was the standard with Zeke? There was no civil trial. There was no criminal case. And he got suspended for 6 weeks. So the idea that it's about any of that other than, quite frankly, the whim of the commissioner, I think that's a problem, that it's the whim of the commissioner, but that's all it is right now.
RJ, during the NFL season here on Straight Outta Vegas, every single week we have a little bit of a disagreement with some of the so-called experts out there covering the NFL and college football. So it's time for the return of this.
It's the pros versus the world.
All right, Fez, we have the so-called experts. And listen, there's some experts on TV, no doubt about it, they in print. But oftentimes the big polls, the big ESPN has this, even Collins herd hierarchy, oftentimes they're just plain wrong. And by the way, anyone from ESPN, Colin, anybody, when we disagree with you, if you want to find a way to bet it and see who's right, you know, my Twitter's at RJ in Vegas. All right, Fez, first team, I want to know who it is that said what and why you disagree.
Yeah, so Colin has Baltimore the number.
So you're going right at Colin.
Twice today.
It was funny. You and Jonas usually don't talk a lot before the show. You were talking more today, but go ahead.
Jonas is in a good mood. So Colin has Baltimore overrated as the number.
Slow down. So Baltimore is what?
They're his number 7 team.
All right. What do you think they are?
Number 12.
All right, let me do the math. All right, overrated.
Yes.
And Colin has Baltimore overrated. Why?
Because Colin is overreacting to the 59-10
beatdown. Well, first of all, is that what his analysis was?
Yes. He said, hey, any team that wins by 49 points has to be way underrated.
Now, what's interesting is this. We're going to be talking about the Dolphins a little bit later. And you actually thought, oh, my gosh, the Dolphins are so, so, so bad. I think you overreacted to that. But isn't it curious? It can be one, it can be the other, it can be a combination of both. Meaning, Baltimore won huge, huge. Okay. Is that because Baltimore's so good? Maybe. And Miami's just not that bad. Or Baltimore could be right what we thought they were, but Miami's that bad. Or it could be a combination. And anytime there's an extreme result and there's two teams, chances are it could be one, it could be the other. It's likely a combination. In this case, though, you think Colin's thinking it's almost all Baltimore's goodness, how good they are. That's why they're so high. And you're thinking, no, 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 it's mostly about how bad Miami is.
Correct.
All right, that's Steve Fezzik. I'm RJ Bell, straight out of Vegas, going against Colin Cowherd first. Now, the other party, who do we got you're going against?
We're going against Colin for our second pick as well.
So you only have two of these. You said, let's just pick on Colin.
That's right.
Go ahead.
So we're going to talk about the New Orleans Saints. Colin has them underrated. Colin does not have the Saints in the top 10, RJ.
Okay. So not in the top 10, and you've got them where?
My number 5 team.
Your number 5 team. Wow. So even if you had them 11, they're 6 slots off.
Yes.
Now, we don't know why. Because he didn't talk about it, I guess. Did he talk about why he didn't include him in the top 10?
He talked about the fact they were disappointing against the Texans on Monday Night Football.
Yeah, which would maybe cause an adjustment. But when you're 1-9 the first 2 weeks of the season, the last 5 years, and you win, you've probably exceeded expectations. That's where the Saints were. Now, what your takeaway from Monday night, did you downgrade the Saints a little bit?
I did not, and here's why. Big question answer. Drew Brees worries about that arm strength. I thought Brees looked great.
Okay, and I agree. And my thought is, and Maddie Holt's with us. If you have any thoughts on this, jump in, Maddie. My thought is with Brees that him looking good with his arm strength tells us that either at the end of last year there was an injury that we didn't necessarily know about, or, as it often is with older quarterbacks, fatigue issue. As the season progresses, they take hits. And remember, a lot of throwing is your lower body. Maybe you're banged up in the knees, the hips, et cetera. Brees looked worse at the end of the year last year. He's older now. I don't have to even use my calculator for that one. How do you get better? Well, only if it was an injury or about fatigue. So if you do think Brees looks good, you got to keep an eye on him. Now, here's the paradox. You can't just say one bad game is, oh, he's tired.
Right.
So it's going to be, if you get that second bad game, and especially if you get three in a row at the second half of the year, now you might be thinking fade Brees, right?
Exactly. And I love the fact he completed 17 passes to his top two wide receivers he was throwing down the field.
Okay, so you're saying it wasn't dump offs as much to the running backs, tight ends, et cetera.
Right.
That's Steve Fezzik. Matty Hope.
And oh, by the way, anything, you know, any, you know, if anybody wants to look at their defense and see any faults there, they're without two of their best defensive players who they will get back, one of whom was suspended. So
the Saints.
Yes.
Okay. And what's the, when are they due back?
One of them's due back one game, right? It was a one game suspension.
Yeah. So we'll look into get the details on that. But that's an interesting point, right? If it's injury, if it's suspensions, whatever it is, you got to account for the fact if a player wasn't there, and then if he's going to be there moving forward, and with a one-game suspension, obviously the case. So, Fez, we're going to talk about the blowouts after the update. Anything else on overrated, underrated?
That's it.
All right, so the whole world we go against, and Colin got 100% of the criticism. And you and Jonas were talking before the show.
We were.
More than usual.
Right.
All right. Could be a coincidence. Could be a coincidence. In just 1 minute, there's 10 teams in the NFL week one that had an extreme result. We're going to tell you which of them you should not really worry about and which of them you should worry about.
That's coming up next. But for all the latest from around the world of sports, it's Dan Byer.
After making a statement about wide receiver Antonio Brown earlier today, Patriots head coach Bill Belichick was in no mood to answer questions about Brown's situation, which includes a civil suit filed against the wide receiver accusing him of rape and sexual assault by a former trainer.
What's at all what Antonio Brown has said to you?
I mean, I'm done with that, okay?
Can you explain what you mean when you're done with it? I mean, we're just trying to find out if he said anything to you about his position and about the allegation.
Yeah, and I just answered that question.
Well, actually, you did.
Actually, I did.
Now, prosecutors in Allegheny County, Pennsylvania, tell KDKA Television in Pittsburgh that they'll look into allegations made against Brown as one of the alleged incident in the civil suit claims to have taken place in their jurisdiction. Some bad news for the Chargers, 1-0 on the season, but they've lost tight end Hunter Henry for a while, suffered a tibia plateau fracture in his left knee and is out indefinitely, with reports saying it's likely a 4 to 6 week timetable for Henry's return. And Chargers head coach Anthony Lynn says the team is concerned about the knee of wide receiver Mike Williams, because they don't know his status heading into their game at Detroit on Sunday. Bengals head coach Zach Taylor says running back Joe Mixon is day-to-day with a sprained ankle. The team will monitor his practice time in hopes of him playing in Week 2 against the 49ers. In baseball news, x-rays on the injured ankle of Dodgers third baseman Justin Turner were inconclusive, according to skipper Dave Roberts, so Turner will have an MRI within the next 24 hours. The good news for the Dodgers, they're division champs after clinching last night with a win against Baltimore. Yankees and Tigers right now being delayed by rain. Back to you guys.
Thanks, Dan. Straight out of Vegas here on Fox Sports Radio. Coming up in about 12 minutes from now here on FSR, we will take a look ahead to a Wednesday night from around the world of sports. I'm Jonas Knox, the voice of you, the fan. He's the voice of Vegas, RJ Bell.
So Matty Holt told us during the update, he goes, you know, I knew the player, but his name is so hard to pronounce, I didn't want to do it on the radio. I thought, you don't know me well enough, Matty. So you got to try to pronounce it, and then one of the best enunciators in the business, Jonas, will show you how to do it. So, Matty Holt,
I believe it is New Orleans Saints defensive tackle David Onyemata.
I am certain it's not that, Jonas.
I actually think that's right.
Ah!
I think he got that right, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh my gosh.
But we can look it up. There's a page where you can find all the they'll spell it out phonetically. So we'll check that out.
Hey, he passed the test. All right, here's what we're gonna do, Jonas. This is a new segment. Is we're gonna look at the extreme results. The stuff that people just go, oh my gosh, I got to reevaluate. And we're going to tell you, hey, a big reaction is justified, or slow your roll. This isn't worth getting too excited or too depressed, right? Up or down. Here's the paradox, though, and this is very important to remember. The NFL week one, the way that you react to that, if you're a pro, if you're doing it right, is about double a week later in the season. Let's say week 10, you know, second half of the year. If there's a 30-point blowout, same yardage stats, same everything, in week 10, you're going to react about half as much as week one. Agree with that, Fez?
Agree.
And the rationale is we have zero data points entering week one. After the first game, you have one data point. You got to take it, you know, it goes from zero to one, but you got to then say, don't overreact, because we had our assumptions coming in the year. We still are going to stick with those mostly, but this one game means more than it usually would. So the teams that you think, hey, embrace it, it means something, are more than you typically would out of 10 teams, five games. Whenever there's an extreme result, obviously it's going to be a winner and a loser. So first off, give me the teams that don't overreact to. Yeah, it was a big score, but don't overreact to this.
Yeah, the Atlanta-Minnesota teams.
All right, so Atlanta and Minnesota, don't overreact. Why?
Because they played a game where Minnesota was +3 in turnover. So Minnesota won the game by 16. A lot of that was the turnover.
Okay, so turnovers have a lot of randomness to it. Next games.
Kansas City against Jacksonville. I don't want to overreact to that because the KC defense got torched and gave up so many yards despite winning by 20 points.
So you're saying scoreboard looked like total domination. Obviously, Foles got knocked out early, which could also affect the Jacksonville defense. Depressed, down. So all in all, I think even the quarterback going out kind of mitigates a big score, you know, that early in the season. And also you're saying if you look at the yardage, it's closer than the scoreboard.
Right.
That makes a ton of sense. So there's three games you're saying, yes, let's react to these, right?
And there's one more, the Dallas Cowboys. I did not react that much to Dallas. And I got to tell you, I think you're
going to... Well, hold on a second. So Dallas played a team, right?
Yes.
So you're going to react to one, but not the other.
And here's why.
Well, wait a minute. That seems crazy. So you're going to say, yes, the Giants, I'm going to downgrade them like crazy because they look so bad. And then, but Dallas, who made them look bad... You're not going to upgrade.
I upgraded them small, and the reason being...
No. Let's get this straight, all right? Because you got to take ownership of this, all right? This is Steve Fezzik, all right? Not R.J. Bell, not Brad Powers having a handicapping day. And Dallas won by how many points?
18.
They dominated the game.
They did.
I mean, it wasn't like some false final,
not fluky at all.
And how many points did you upgrade them?
Only a half a point.
A half a point.
And here's why.
Uh-huh.
I feel I have a high confidence level of how good Dallas is. A lot of these teams, I'm really not sure.
Mm-hmm.
But Dallas, I'm like, they're a wild card team. I'm confident.
But did that look like a wild card team that you saw?
No, but I feel that was a little bit of an aberration. Because.
But you could say that about anything. Why was it an aberration?
Because I just feel at the end of the year, the Cowboys are going to be 10-6.
So what you're saying is, no matter what happens on the field, you're not going to take it seriously because there's an inner truth within Steve Fezzik.
For the Cowboys, yes.
Just the Cowboys.
Yes.
So if they started out 0-9, let's flip it because they're 1-0. If they went 9-0, you'd be like, yep, same team I expect. I expect them to finish the year 1.
At some point, we'll adjust.
Okay, but you're going to be slow on the Cowboys.
Yes.
Because you know them so well.
I just feel there hasn't been many changes in their moving parts from last year.
Well, I mean, in a way, do you need all the changes since they had the receiver from the Raiders? They were pretty good, right? They have a young defense. It seems to be getting better.
Yeah, especially a linebacker.
That seems like some changes, right?
Maybe I haven't adjusted enough.
I wonder if there's some personal relationship. And we know Van Fleet, right? all the personal stuff with that Toronto basketball player. We won't get into it. Also, Jimmy G. I mean, I don't have to even explain that. We got the tape.
I love Jimmy G.
And the baritone, the 4 a.m., the bourbon, whatever's going on there. Very disturbing. It just say yes or no. Is there anything personal about the Cowboys and the individual players that's causing you to be biased?
Never liked the Cowboys.
Oh, so what you're saying is maybe it, now, in a way, you're joking. I mean, it's not necessarily funny what you're saying, but you're trying to joke. But I think it's important to realize there are biases you don't even realize. I don't realize. No one realizes. That's the definition is you don't know. You think it's just good thinking, right? And this strikes me as one of the stranger things I've ever seen. The idea that, I mean, Maddie, let's use you as an example. Did you look at Dallas's performance and say, huh, about what I expected?
No, I thought Dak Prescott's ability to throw the football downfield beyond that 8 yards past the line of scrimmage was really impressive.
I agree. And I'll give you another example of what changed. Oh, let me see. The offensive coordinator and by the people, Kellen Moore, he's only like 30 years old. And from the people who watched the tape, I didn't watch every play. What I'm hearing is a bunch of play action, which, again, with Zeke is very valuable. And also I'm hearing the complexity of the schemes. It wasn't as vanilla as last year, which means that Cowboys just aren't going to use their talent to win on offense. They might outcoach some people on offense. Seems like a pretty big change, Fez.
And accurate to medium to long throws all day by Dak Prescott. Very impressive performance.
Any response?
Whenever you disagree with RJ Bell, you better realize you're the underdog.
So, but now do you want to reevaluate because of the wisdom?
No,
I
I'm going to stick with my numbers.
That sounds smart. So I'm guessing, last thing on this, you had your biggest bet of the season or biggest bet of the calendar year on the Cowboys. Because if you expected that kind of domination, wouldn't you have a gigantic bet?
And I did not.
When we come back, we're going to tell you the team. You thought Dallas was crazy, most of you, hopefully. Fez only upgraded in 1 point. This is triply crazy, the team he downgraded drastically.
That's coming up next. He's RJ Bell. I'm Jonas Knox. This is the pregame show you always wanted right here on Fox Sports Radio.
Be sure to catch live editions of Straight Outta Vegas weekdays at 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific.
I'm RJ Bell. We are Straight Outta Vegas.
And I'm Jonas Knox, voice of you, the fan. So Steve Fezzik told us last segment that he is not as big of a fan of the Dallas Cowboys after one game as a lot of people are around sports talk radio and sports television. But Fez has even a bigger shocker in his power rankings, RJ.
Yeah, and this is important to realize. Most people overreact to week one. So temper your reactions. Think about all the teams that look great in years past, that was their best game even, right? And vice versa. Power ratings-wise, when you, before the first game, 100% of your number is based on your assumptions coming in. After the first game, how much is assumptions coming in and how much is the data of the first game?
85% assumptions, 15% week one data.
Most people don't think like that. That's Steve Fezzik. Now, you've got a downgrade that's as big as I've ever seen. Who is it and how big?
Miami Dolphins. I downgraded them 3 points, RJ.
Okay, so we were talking. You were wavering between 2 and 3, right, if I remember? Have you landed on 2 or 3?
I landed on 3.
Oh, wow, interesting. So how rare is it to downgrade a team 3 points after one game?
Absent a quarterback injury, I can't recall ever doing it.
So this is by definition unprecedented.
Yes.
I'm going to let you make your case. You got, we're a little tight on time. Make your case. I'm not even going to argue with you.
It's all about the locker room for Miami. I don't know if there's an issue with effort with Miami and whether it will continue. It's unclear.
So if it's not about effort, then what could cause a 3-point downgrade?
It's got to be the effort. Obviously, I'm going to downgrade them 1 point for the performance, RJ. But what I saw was a team that even when they're getting blown out was not giving full effort week one, and it could well continue.
And listen, if that assumption is correct, then you're right. I've never seen an NFL team this early in the year give up, so we're going to see. You think the Dolphins have. All right, real quick, guys, about a minute each here. Matty Holt, you've got a best bet in the colleges.
I'm going to go with the Kentucky Wildcats, Florida Gators under 50.5 points here.
So a big national radio show. You're saying let's do a total in college.
It's this a big SEC total.
This better win. This better win. Yeah.
Look, Kentucky lost their starting quarterback, Terry Smith. Florida has one of the best defenses in the country. New quarterback, former Troy transfer, Sawyer Smith, going to have to make his first start in Lexington against a very good defense. They only scored 44 total, Florida versus Miami. 50.5 looks a little bit high here. I'm going to go under.
You know why I like this? I think if you look at the Kentucky quarterback, he's about the same quality as the starter, but he's less mobile. And against a very athletic Florida team, I think not having that guy can break some plays for a not a great offense with Kentucky is a big difference maker. So under Kentucky and Florida.
Yes.
Steve Fezzik was on fire last year with his early line moves in the NFL, and so now it's time for a week two edition, Steve Fezzik's early line move.
45 seconds, Fez.
I'm on the Oakland Raiders +7.5 against Kansas City. I bet Oakland +7.5, and I do think this line will come down, and it's all about the market not adjusting enough for Oakland's new additions on offense. Loved what I saw. Number one now, wide receiver Williams, now that AB is gone, solid game. Number one, tight end Waller, really played well, and the rookie running back Jacobs was a beast. I like what I saw out of Oakland. I bet Oakland +7.5.
And that's fascinating. A lot of people would think the Raiders won on Monday Night Football, got a lot of attention, and people might overreact and upgrade them. You're saying they weren't upgraded enough. I think it's an interesting point. The pick for Fez is the Raiders is the idea the younger a team is, the more you're going to learn from week one, because your assumptions are more limited. Raiders are a very young team. They look good. It makes sense that they maybe you adjust for that more than you would typically.
The Odd Couple is next on many of these Fox Sports Radio affiliates. We are straight out of Vegas, back tomorrow, 6 p.m. Eastern time, right here on Fox Sports Radio.
Straight out of Vegas!
Straight out of Vegas!
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.